Tour Jazz session number 39. We are talking about Parshat Vayelech. This year we actually get Vayelech all alone, all to ourselves. We don't have to share it with Parshat Nitzavim this year. And I want to talk about one of my favorite mitzvahs. I mean, I like all of them. But here we are, if you're counting, this is mitzvah number 612. Taryab of the Taryag, 613 mitzvahs. The final two mitzvahs, 612 and 613, are given in this week's Parsha, Vayelech. It also happens to be the last day of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. He gives us these final two mitzvahs. So the mitzvah of Hakel, 612, the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah, 613. The mitzvah of Hakel tells us like this. At the end of the seventh year of the seven-year cycle, meaning we're at the end of the Shemitah year, and by the end we mean the end, in the beginning of the following year, the eighth year, during the festival of the Tabernacles, also known as Sukkot, for people who don't know what a tabernacle is, the Jewish people come to the Holy Temple, as they do during the pilgrimages or the regalim. And there's a special mitzvah on that first year or that eighth year, however you want to call it, the beginning of the new cycle during Sukkot, that the Jewish people come and they listen to the Jewish king read from a Sefer Torah, specifically reading Deuteronomy, the book we're currently in, Dvarim. So it says, gather in the nation the men, the women, and the taf. Now, taf is an interesting word. We'll have to talk a little bit about what that word means, but just for simplicity's sake, we're going to call it children. Vegercha, the convert, asher b'sherecha, right, in your gates, in your cities, so that they shall ready, lama'an yishma'u, they shall hear, Ulaman Yilmadu, they shall learn, V'yaru es Hashem Elokeichem, and they shall fear the Lord your God, V'shamru lasot et kol divrei Torah zot, and they will guard in order to do all of the words of this Torah. That is the basic idea of Hakel. I do have to add that I don't want to cheat you, okay? If you're following along inside your holy book, we are in chapter 31, verse 12 right now. Chapter 31, verse 12, chapter and verse. Thank you very much. If you go to verse 13, the next verse, there's a similar verse to the one we just read, and it's important to just note both verses because the commentaries are going to learn things differently due to the nuance in these two verses. Verse 13, Uvnehem, and your children, right? We'll have to see if there's a difference between this word taf we used earlier for children and Vnehem. Asher lo yadu, those who don't know, they're not learned, they don't know. Yishmu'u vilamdu, they will hear and they will learn. Liyira es Hashem Elokeichem, to fear the Lord your God. Kol yamim, all these days, asher etem chayim al adama, that you live on the earth, asher etem mirim et hayarden, shama lerishta, that you are crossing over the Jordan River there to inherit it. Okay, good. Thems are the two verses. Now, the interesting question here, and we're going to start with Rashi to kick us off, because what a great place to start. We have here the purpose of coming down, we're told, is for three things. To hear, to learn, and to fear the Lord your God. Says Rashi as follows. We have men that are supposed to come, women's that are supposed to come, and children's that are supposed to come. And generally, being that this is a time-bound positive commandment, women would normally be exempt. In this case, we see that women are part of the mitzvah. They are commanded explicitly in the verse to come. So that means the men are commanded, the women are commanded, and somehow the children seem to be part of this commandment as well. Rashi says, Ha'anashim, the men, lilmod. You remember that was one of the three reasons we had over there. Hanashim lishmoa, to listen, one of the three. V'hataf lamabo, says Rashi, why are the children here? What are they doing in this mitzvah? What are they coming for? Latet schar lemivieihem, in order to give reward to those who bring them. Now, I just want to make a quick clarification over here. We'll try to do this as fast as possible. The distinction between the two types of mitzvahs that the men and women are coming for, to learn and to listen, you see across all the commentaries, starting in the Rishonim through the Achronim, the listening over here by women does not mean that they're just listening and not learning, but it also means to learn. And without going into all the details, but men have a mitzvah of what's called limud. And limud is to plumb the depth of the oral tradition. Women do not have the mitzvah of limud, but they certainly have a mitzvah to learn, what we're calling here lishmoa, or in other places veshinantam, which means anything that has to do with any halacha that pertains to them, anything in Torah that teaches how to be a God-fearing Jew, basically anything a woman would need to live her own life and to raise a family in the Jewish tradition, she has a requirement to learn. And as a matter of fact, many of the commentaries learn that the father has an obligation to teach her. So the men to learn, meaning to learn the oral tradition. The women to listen, meaning to learn the written tradition. Now, the children, that's the big question. Why are the children here? Rashi says the children are here to bring reward to those who bring them. Now, if we're looking at Rashi and trying to understand simply what he means, it sounds like Rashi is telling us that there is no purpose in the children really being there other than to give reward to the parents. Now, the commentaries are going to split neatly into two over here, those in the Rashi camp, those in the Ramban camp. But to be a little bit more accurate about it, the Rashi camp is really the camp of the Gemara, because Rashi, as most Rashis, is not making up his own pshat. Rather, he is quoting the Gemara in Chagiga on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, page 3, folio A. And over there, this is the exact drasha, Rabbi Yeshua. The story goes over there. Talmidim of Rabbi Yeshua went to go meet him on the festivals. He wanted to know who was giving the drasha, the lecture, that particular Shabbos in the Sanhedrin. Happened to be Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's Shabbos to give the drasha. And he gave over this exact drush, which Rabbi Yeshua was very happy to hear. More on that later. So Rashi is taking the side of the Gemara, is expressing exactly what the Gemara has to say. The Ramban does not, the Ramban has a hard time accepting this pshat, that these children are of an age where there's no learning for them to be doing over there. So as a matter of fact, the Ramban learns that these taf are not babies, which is what it sounds like from Rashi, but rather they're young children who are not yet at the age of chinuch, at the age of learning. So these children are not yet 5-6 years old. And that, the Ramban learns, is why the verse says, in the second verse, let's just get there, v'lamdu lira. You're bringing them, they don't have real fear, awe of God right now. They're too young for that. But you're bringing them in order to begin the process that they will learn how one comes to a fear of God. They'll see all the Jewish people gathering, right? They'll see the mothers, the fathers, everybody together, listening attentively, standing for hours on end, listening to every word that the king himself is reading out of the Sefer Torah, and that will impact the child. And even though now it won't bring him to fear of God, but as he grows up, those images will begin, that will stay with him and bring him as he grows up to a place of fear of God. So what do we see? It sounds like from Rashi that there's no purpose for the child for his own sake to be there. He's really there for the sake, for the reward of the parents. And according to the Ramban, no. This is a child who's not quite at the age of learning, but he's getting there, and this will start to begin the process of inculcating him with a fear of God. Okay, good. So what do we see? Just to break it down, just to make it very clear, categories right now. Rashi's category is babies. We're talking about babies. Those are the tough. Suckling babes. The Ramban's approach is referring to children not yet 5 to 6 years old. We notice that neither of them have mentioned children who are actually at the age of learning. Seemingly, if the children are actually at the age of learning, we don't have to come up with some reason why they're there. They're there to learn. Maybe because the father's mitzvah of chinuch or the father's mitzvah of teaching his child Torah, whatever it is, but neither Rashi nor the Ramban took the approach of a child at the age of 5 or 6. Okay, so we see that there's a whole event. It's a powerful event. The nation's coming together. They're honoring the Torah together. There's an excitement. There's a buzz. There's a focus on Torah. Right? Rav Hirsch paints it beautifully, as Rav Hirsch always does. The nation is getting ready to go back to work, back to the fields after a Shemitah year to begin the new cycle. And it's a time of Sukkot. It's a time where we're feeling very vulnerable, very close to Hashem. We leave our homes. We go out into these shacks to show how connected we are. This is the time, says Rav Hirsch, to infuse the Jewish people with a deep love of Torah before they go back out into the fields to go back to their farming lifestyle. The chinuch, also very dramatic, very beautiful explanation. This is the essence of the Jewish people. It's Torah. Right, our uniqueness from all nations of the world is that our life is focused on a life of the world to come, of connection to Torah and mitzvot. So we need to make a massive event to stir the people up so they shall come to introspection, even women and babies, to cause us all to think about and appreciate the Torah. Okay, good. So now, as far as our two approaches, building on the approach of the Ramban, two other commentaries who go in the approach of the Ramban are Rav Hirsch, at least in the first explanation of Rav Hirsch, before he brings the Marashal that we'll speak about, and the Malbim. That again, these are children who are before the age of Chinuch, and Rav Hirsch learns it very beautifully here from the verse that you have these two different categories. When we speak about the men, women, and babes, we say, Laman yishmu, so that you shall hear. Ulaman yilmadu, and so that you should learn. Viyaru, and fear Hashem, your Lord, your God, the Lord, your God. Okay, good. So Rashi, because we see in the verse itself, it's broken up into three things. Laman yishma'u, laman yilmadu, v'yirau, right? We see that it's three different things. In the next verse, uvenehem, and your children, right? So the first one, we're talking about men and women. They'll come to learn, they'll come to hear, the way that Rashi described it, and they'll both come to fear of God. Then the verse goes back to describe what's happening to the children. Uvneim asher lo yadu yishmu velamdu. You see that there it's not separated. It's not yishmu ulaman yilmadu. It's yishmu velamdu. They will listen and learn lira to fear. Meaning that the children don't have these three different distinct purposes for coming. Hearing, learning, and fearing. Rather, the children are hearing, and through that hearing, they're learning to fear. That hearing is bringing them to that place of learning to fear in the future. The way the Ramban explains it, we're talking about children right before the age of chinuch. The Malbim over here is very beautiful. There are a lot of very dramatic, very poetic descriptions over here. The Malbim says a very fascinating thing over here, a deep insight into chinuch. A lot of people like to quote this Malbim, that men and that the children have a special reason. It's not sort of like the way Rav Hirsch, we'll see Rav Hirsch in a second, sort of describing the children being there as there's a reason for the parents to be there, and there's also a reason for the children to be there. The Malbim seems to be saying that the main event, the main focus is really the children. Why? Because the children get more impacted by this event than anybody else. And so, of course, the Malbim's learning that these are children who are not babies. They're at an age where they can see and appreciate and be impacted by this event. And the Malbim says something amazing. He says, the men and the women, the adults, come, and they are busy and distracted with all sorts of, I have to focus, I have to listen, and the men are trying to understand the deeper meanings of the verses, and the women are trying to take it all in, and we're impacted by, A, the fact that we know these verses, and we're trying to connect them and recollect them and introspect on them, and simultaneously we have all sorts of other distractions in life, the less glorious aspects of human existence, whereas the children come in and they're a clean slate. They don't know these verses, they're unfamiliar with them, and they don't have any other distractions of regular life. And when they stand and see this event, they, more than anybody else, can actually take in the awesomeness, the whole impact of what it means to have millions of Jewish people standing in the courtyard, the courtyard of the temple, and listening to the king reading from the Torah. What a powerful, impactful, remarkable event that is. We all get distracted by the sort of been there, seen there, what's it mean to me, how am I approaching it this year sort of a thing, where children with that clean slate sort of get the real, whoa, breathtaking moment because they're so young and fresh and unencumbered by the sort of distractions that we have as adults. Okay, so that's Rav Hirsch, and that's the Malbim. Now, it's important to point out that Rav Hirsch goes on to quote the Maharsha over here. As we know, we saw that the Ramban disagrees with the Gemara. As a matter of fact, he says afterwards, he says his pshat, he says, however, our sages say, right, to give a reward for bringing them, which means seemingly the Ramban notices that, I mean, obviously he notices that the Gemara disagrees with his approach, with his pshat. And the Ramban's going to live with that. That's his choice in expressing how the pshat is in the verse, and that what Chazal are saying is rather a drasha. Okay. Now, Rav Hirsch does point out that the Maharsha over here, in coming to explain Rashi, in coming to explain the Gemara, understands that the two verses are referring to two different types of children. Meaning, yes, nachon, correct, what the Ramban said is true in the second verse. But the taf of the first verse is referring indeed, like Rashi said, to babies. Which means that Rashi can also accept the pshat of the Ramban, and it does not in any way dislodge the pshat that Rashi said, because Rashi was speaking about the first verse, where he was speaking about taf, and not bnehem of the second verse. So now we have the Maharsha, and the Maharsha puts us in great position in Rashi, because he's working with us with the Gemara, two psukim. There's taf, who are really babies, and then there's the banim, who are children who are approaching the age of chinuch, the age of learning, just below 5 and 6 years old. The real shocker in this one, at least for me over here, is the Gur Aryeh. The Gur Aryeh is pretty remarkable over here, in that normally the Gur Aryeh, we use the Gur Aryeh to bail us out when we need some help. Over here, we're going to need some bailing out from the Gur Aryeh. The Maharal over here is troubled, of course, like everybody else, with this idea of taf, but thinks it's ridiculous to claim that the taf that we're discussing over here are actually babies. Because if the taf indeed are babies, asks the Maharal, Why are we bringing them? What's the purpose? What do we gain? What are these babies understanding? Because as of now, in those commentaries where we spoke about the children being affected and being impacted, we were talking about children who were old enough to be impacted. But the way that Rashi sounds, not like the Ramban, it sounds like we're speaking about actual babies. And actual babies would seem to gain nothing by standing around at this event of Hakel. They won't remember it anyways. If you want to see a similar idea, you can look at just the first paragraph. The Kli Yakar asks a very similar question and states it sort of humorously by saying Hashem may as well command the parents, if the whole point is just to give them a reward for bringing something, so command them to bring rocks and sticks. Why have to command them to bring your babies? Meaning, what's the difference? The rocks and sticks will remember just about as much about this event as the babies. And because of that, the Maharal rejects the possibility of these taf being actual babies and gives a very fascinating pshat, a difficult pshat, because as we've said up until now, we have avoided including chinuch-aged children as the taf of the verse. Says the Maharal, who are the taf of whom we speak? The taf of whom we speak are chinuch-aged children. Well, if they're chinuch-aged children, why is the point of bringing them to give a reward to those who bring them? Certainly, the point of bringing them would be for them to learn, right? For them to fear, for them to see, for them to take it in. Why is the best we can come up with to give them a reward? So the Maharal says a very interesting answer. He says, anyways, a father is commanded to teach his son Torah, or his children Torah. But that doesn't mean he has to teach him Torah right now. What does that mean to say? That's a positive commandment that he has all year long, that he can fulfill whenever he wants. Here, the Torah is saying it's especially important that you should teach him Torah at Hakel. So therefore, the Torah doesn't give us the answer, you know, for him to learn Torah, for him to learn fear of God, because that's something that the father will do with him anyways. There's just a special commandment, a special reward for the father, for him to do it with the child at Hakel. So that is the answer of the Gur Ayin. I'll tell you why I find it challenging, where my challenges are with this Gur Aryeh. You know, the Gur Aryeh, on his own terms, deals with a question and he gives an answer. However, what the Gur Aryeh is rejecting is two possibilities over here. First of all, the Gur Aryeh is rejecting the possibility that this event, Hakel, could in any way impact the baby. Also, he's rejecting the possibility that this event could impact the parents of the baby. I'll tell you why I say that. I'm coming from two other commentaries. Rav Hirsch, which we didn't discuss, when Rav Hirsch goes into the possibility of the taf being babies, so what is the event all about? The parents bring the babies because it's important for them as parents to take their most precious possessions, children, bring them down to Yerushalayim and experience this event of Torah together with them, to inculcate into the parents the importance of Torah and connecting our children to the Torah. That's Rav Hirsch's approach to babies. The Meshech Chachma, and the truth is a lot of other commentaries, take a different approach, and that is the impact it could have on a baby. And it's an interesting question. I thought of the question first, and then I found all the sources who actually talk about it. And as a matter of fact, these sources make a really beautiful connection between the Gemara and Chagiga that we mentioned at the beginning and this mitzvah of Hakel. if you recall the Tana who kicked us off on this whole Gemara of Hakel was none other than Rabbi Yeshua. Now, Rabbi Yeshua asks the students, what was the drasha? They tell him the drasha. He says, oh, how could you have kept that hidden, beautiful gem? How could you keep that beautiful gem hidden from me? Now, Rabbi Yeshua has a special connection to the idea of bringing babies into places of Torah learning. If you look in Pirkei Avos, chapter 2, Mishnah 8, over there, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is describing his five students. When he gets to Rabbi Yeshua, he says, Ashrei Yoladito, fortunate is the one who birthed him. Which is an interesting compliment to give a person. Rashi over there explains what that compliment means. Rashi is quoting a Yerushalmi in a tractate Yevamos over there that describes how Rabbi Yoshua's mother used to take his crib, and she used to take it to all the different Batei Medrash, all the different houses of learning in their neighborhood, so that he should grow up with the words of Torah constantly in his ears. There's more than that. It also says that she used to ask everybody to pray for her baby, that he should be successful in learning. And because of that, Rabbi Yeshua became one of the great Torah giants of the history of the Jewish people. So, says the Meshech Chachma, well, isn't it obvious why we're bringing the taf? Why we're bringing the babies? We're bringing the babies because we want the babies to be the next Rabbi Yeshua, right? By bringing them to this event, so even though they're babies, and maybe they'll forget about it, but certainly this event will somehow impact them in some way, maybe some sort of spiritual heebie-jeebie way, the way that being in the Beis Medrash as a baby seemed to have had a powerful impact on Rabbi Yeshua. So, bringing the children, right? We see two possibilities in Rav Hirsch as babies, either because it's going to affect the parents, or according to the Meshech Chachma and many other commentaries, because it will affect the baby, it will have some sort of powerful effect on him, even if, you know, if you ask any child psychologist, it should not have an effect on him. Fine. Those are those two possibilities. And we see that the Maharal and the Kli Yakar reject those two possibilities outright. The Kli Yakar in comparing the baby to sticks and rocks, and the fact that the Gurari won't even seem to entertain this possibility of it being a baby because there's no purpose or point to bringing a baby. Now, why does the Maharal reject these two possibilities? Okay. So, first of all, one thing that I thought about with this idea of Rabbi Yoshua, and it's a very nice connection that Rabbi Yoshua is the one in the Gemara and Chagiga who gets us all going, and that's the Dvar Torah that they tell him, right? Because he says, oh my gosh, that was my mom. But it seems that the Maharal and all these different answers that we're giving, you know, if you just, well, let's say like this. First of all, Hakel is a once in an 8-year event. It's not going to the Beis Medrash every day. And something interesting, you know, that I thought about was, and it's interesting because I'll tell you, the Chasam Sofer in his drashos does actually mention this action of taking the crib, the baby, and putting him into the Beis Medrash as a segula for children who will be righteous and Talmidei Chachamim. But if you think about it, if every mother took her baby and stuck the baby in the Beis Medrash, particularly because she heard it was a segula, or because she was commanded to do so, seemingly not all those babies would turn out to be Torah giants. As a matter of fact, I would assume that part of the reason why Rabbi Yeshua became so great was not because as a baby he sat in the Beis Medrash, but rather because he had a mother, right? Ashrei Yoladitu, the praise goes to the mother. Not Ashrei, the baby that got stuck in the Beis Medrash, but Ashrei Yoladitu, Ashrei, the mother, who took such pains to take her baby every morning, all day long, to all these different Batei Medrash. She had so much care and concern and love for his development as a Torah scholar that she put so much, invested so much into him in prayers and tears and begged other people to pray for him. That's the reason that Rabbi Yeshua became great. So it's not that sticking a baby in the middle of Beis Medrash makes the baby great. It's that a mother who's willing to be Moser Nefesh, to bend over backwards, to expose her child always, all the days of his life, to Torah learning, that's what makes a child great. And by commanding mothers to bring their babies, won't have the same effect. Now, another possibility, and this doesn't exactly address why it won't impact the baby, but it does make it hard to understand the Meshech Chachma or Rav Hirsch in the actual pshat of the Gemara, just in the simple language. Because in the language it says, why are the babies being brought? To give reward to those who bring them. Now, I understand the Meshech Chachma is working with those words, Rav Hirsch is working with those words, everybody's working with those words, but with their answers, because it impacts the parent, with that answer, because it does impact the baby, those answers don't really fit so gracefully into the words to bring reward to those who bring them. To bring reward to those who bring them sounds like there is no other benefit that comes out for the child or for the parent. Now, the most graceful way, I think, to answer that challenge in the Gemara is brought in the Sefer Panim Yafos. That's by the author of the Hafla, that's his Sefer on Chumash, says that the reward of those who bring them is the fact that the children will grow up to be connected to Torah, and that will continue their lineage as Jews. It's a very beautiful way to fit in this idea, meaning the reward isn't necessarily for the child, the reward is for the parent. By what? By the parent bending over backward to bring the child to participate in Hakel. The reward that they get is their children developing and building more generations of God-fearing Jews. Okay, very nice way of fitting it all in. However, I can see the Maharal's side over here. When we talk about schar, reward, we're not usually talking about those sorts of things. We're talking about the reward. Schar mitzvah b'hai al maleika. There is no reward for a mitzvah in this world. We're talking about the actual schar, the reward, which is the reward in the world to come. And so therefore, the Maharal has that struggle because no matter what practical element or effect can come out of bringing a baby, we have to deal with the fact that the Gemara itself was dealing with this idea of adding reward for the mitzvah itself, and that's why the Maharal says we're talking about a mitzvah that you're obligated in anyway, not a baby, because why would the Chumash tell you to just bring a baby? What for? Who gains? So we see that the Maharal seems to be rejecting the possibility of any gain, and also just fitting into the words of the Gemara, to bring reward means there has to be some sort of a mitzvah action with a mitzvah reward, not a practical, real-world reward. Still, the gut feeling of this Maharal does leave something to be desired. I know it's hard to talk about a Maharal that way, but that is just the reality. It's Torah, and we got to learn it, and we got to connect it, and we got to appreciate it. Okay, now the exciting news is that there is an unbelievable, earth-shatteringly awesome Ksav VaKabbalah on this week's Parsha. So the Ksav VaKabbalah asks an interesting question. He says, look, just as far as the verses go, the language of Chumash, who do the verses support in the definition of what the word taf means? He quotes the Ramban and says, the Ramban is right. I'll bring you proofs from throughout the Chumash that taf means toddlers, children who are not yet at that age of learning, before the age of 5 or 6, just like the Ramban says. However, says the Ksava Kabbalah, I'm also going to bring you proofs like Rashi that taf can mean babies, suckling babes, just like Rashi says. And not only does the Ksava Kabbalah bring proofs in the text for both sides, like Ramban and like Rashi, the Ksava Kabbalah brings other sources proving, as a matter of fact, also from a Yerushalmi, that the pshat is indeed like Rashi, that the taf that we're referring to specifically in our pasuk are babies. So what that means is, not only has the Ksava HaKabbalah with his proofs sunk the Ramban's pshat, or at least relegated it to the second pasuk only, but that means that the Ksava HaKabbalah has also taken out the Gur Aryeh's pshat, because he has excluded chinuch-aged children from being a possibility. So if that's the case, and we're back to babies, what is the Ksava Kabbalah going to do with the Gur Aryeh and the Kli Yakar's problem that what is the point of bringing babies? How should that bring reward to their parents? And the Kli Yakar, Ksava Kabbalah, says a remarkably awesome answer. The Ksava Kabbalah, a little bit dramatic in his representation over here, but that's okay, it's good for effect, says these mothers, yes, who have these suckling, nursing babes, what exactly are they meant to do with them while they make their trek to Yerushalayim, to the Beis HaMikdash, for the festivals? Shall they just deposit their month-old baby with a neighbor for the month and a half that it takes to make the trip back and forth? Right? Shall they lock up their baby with a bike chain and leave it with a bottle? What exactly is this mother supposed to do with her baby? Does she not have mercy on this beautiful child that she's just going to leave it behind? Of course she's going to bring the baby with her. She's not going to leave the baby. Now, this is a, you know, if we're talking about babies, we might be talking about a nursing mother. So the Ksava Kabbalah understands that anyways, if we understand human nature, the nature of this mother is going to be that she's going to want to bring the baby with her to Hakel. And so therefore, the mother, in any case, wants to bring this baby and is going to bring this baby. So if the mother is anyways, by her nature, going to bring the baby, why does the Gemara go out of her, why does the Chumash tell her that she's commanded to bring the baby? You don't need a commander to bring the baby. She's going to bring the baby regardless. Comes in the Ksava Kabbalah and says an amazing thing. And I'll tell you why this pshat is so beautiful. It works so nicely into the words. If you see the Gemara in Makos over there, on the idea of Hashem wanting to increase the schar for the Jewish people, Ratzon Kadosh Baruch Hu Arba Schar LeYisrael. Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give us more reward. That word schar again. Therefore, what did he do? According to one opinion, there were certain mitzvahs which by human nature we anyways would carry out. For example, there is a mitzvah not to eat blood. There is a mitzvah not to eat insects and all sorts of other gross things. Now, by nature, people don't do that. Obviously, it's one of the proofs that the Amora never met any people from Chinatown, because they do eat all those things and happily. But okay, your average standard person, human nature, is not to eat insects, not to eat blood. And anyways, the Torah came along and made a provision, don't eat. Why did the Torah make these provisions of something you were going to do anyways? Because Hashem wanted to give the Jewish people extra reward. Instead of doing it as a Oseve, Eino Mitzuve, someone who does the mitzvah but is not commanded to do so, Hashem wanted to give us the possibility to do it as a commandment to now not eat blood, not eat bugs. Why? Because Hashem said so. Not just because they're gross. So too here, says the Ksav HaKabbalah, these women were anyways going to bring the babies, and Hashem wanted to give them a reward. He wanted to turn it into a mitzvah. Don't just bring the baby because you're going to have to bring the baby anyways. Bring the baby because it's part of the Hakel experience. Hashem wants you to bring the baby. Is it going to be any good for the baby? No. Is it going to impact you? Maybe yes, maybe no, but you're bringing the baby anyways. Do it because Hashem told you to bring the baby. So that, says the Ksav HaKabbalah, is the pshat and taf, and bringing the taf. This idea that the women are anyways going to bring it, but for their trouble and for their pains, Hashem at least wants them to have a mitzvah from bringing these babies, and that's why it's a commandment in the Torah to bring the baby. Now, what comes out, which is very fascinating for all of this, is that what we're seeing is that there is a Torah commandment to bring the child with you to Hakel, right? Now, if it's a baby, that's easy to understand, right? The baby doesn't really have a choice, but neither do you. You are commanded not only to show up to Hakel, you are commanded to show up with your baby. It's interesting, the chinuch, the Minchas Chinuch actually, not the chinuch himself, but the Minchas Chinuch, the commentary on the Sefer Chinuch, has a very interesting halacha that he learns out of this, which is that unlike the mitzvah of Re'iyah, of coming up, making a pilgrimage to the Holy Temple, any child who is exempt from making pilgrimage to the temple because he's lame, he's a chiger, or because he's blind, or because he's deaf, there's no mitzvah to take him to Yerushalayim as a child, because the only reason to do that would be for chinuch, right? And chinuch is a rabbinic mitzvah. It's a mitzvah derabbanan, two different places in Shas that seem to conclude that way. So for the mitzvah of Re'iyah, a child who would be exempt as an adult is exempt also as a child. However, over here, since the commandment is a Torah commandment on the parents and not on the child, because a child can't be commanded, therefore, says the Minchas Chinuch, that the parent has to bring the child no matter what, even if the child himself will be exempt from the mitzvah when he's older, the parents are obligated. Now, that is going to come out to be very fascinating, very interesting. I know I keep using that word fascinating. It's fascinating, isn't it? That, well, what happens to those who are learning the pshat that this child isn't a baby, but this child is approaching the age of chinuch, or this child is at the age of chinuch? Now you have a child who's 5 or 6, or maybe even 7 or 8, and you are commanded to bring him to the Beit HaMikdash for Hakel, because the child himself is not old enough to be commanded. But the parent has a commandment to bring him, very clearly, in the verse, if we're learning from the Minchas Chinuch, that this is actually a Torah obligation of Chinuch, of educating your child. And so Hakel has a lot of beautiful ideas to it, all about the importance of Torah, Jewish people coming together, sharing as a family, right? Torah is not just for men. It's not just for women. It's not just for adults. It's for everybody. It's for men. It's for women. It's for children. It's a experience, an experience that binds a family to higher purposes in this world, and not just for mundane things. So now, instead of the men, women, and children coming for the Super Bowl, or coming for a presidential election, they are coming together as a family, connect to this concept of fearing God and keeping mitzvahs. The mitzvah of chinuch, which is a rabbinic mitzvah, in general we have a sort of way of approaching it, a rule, which is chanuch lenar pidarko. You have to educate a child in his natural ways and his natural tendencies. And therefore, also, even the Torah commandment of teaching a child Torah has to be done in a way in which the child is going to accept it. You can teach the child Torah, and either he will learn it from you, won't learn it from you, accept it, won't accept it. But whatever way you present it to the child and the amount and how you do it is all going to depend on the child, your relationship with the child, his strengths, his challenges. So too, any mitzvah which is under the rabbinic mitzvah of chinuch, of educating a child, the idea of educating a child is putting them in a position so that adults, they'll be able to learn it enough to do the mitzvah. And sometimes that means really letting go, stepping back, letting the child not do it or not do it right and not pushing too hard, because that's all the process of raising and educating children. The mitzvah of Hakel seems to be different, because here it's a Torah obligation on the parent to bring the child. It's interesting, I don't know, what happens, you know, if the child does not want to go? Is the parent obligated to bring him kicking and screaming to the Beis HaMikdash? But what it does bring to the fore is that when it comes to Torah, and especially this once a year, once every 8 year, 7 year, once every 7 year event of the whole nation coming together to bond and experience the power of Torah together as a nation, there it's a lot more forceful in bringing the child. We often worry about overburdening our children with demands. When it comes to refining their character, life skills, different things we want them to develop, we're often very cautious, we're often very careful not to push too hard. Here, however, seemingly, the power of this event, the power of educating a child to real fear of heaven, to see that he's not unique, he's not alone, he's not isolated, but that there is something that brings every Jew from every corner of Israel together to share in this one powerful event, that's a place where the Torah seems to say that there will be no compromises in the child's participation. What comes out of this is it is the only positive Torah commandment that we are obligated to make sure that our children participate in and follow through in. And while it's true that oftentimes we wear kid gloves or walk on eggshells or whatever idiom you want to use over here, when it comes to our children's education, we don't push too hard, especially this day and age. We're so concerned about overburdening them. But the Torah says, no, in this case, in this nationwide event, where the Jewish people come together with a purpose of connecting to Torah and the fear of God, in this case, the Torah tells us there is no compromise with the child. The child has to come, has to connect, has to participate. And that, I think, is a pretty awesome insight that we take out of this mitzvah of Hakel, how much we can apply it to our lives. I don't know exactly how much you can apply it to your life, but certainly there are times, there are events, there are unique things that happen where a child has a moment to connect to something very special, a Gadol HaDor, one of the great Torah giants of our generation, a kenis, some sort of ingathering of large amounts of Jews, where I do think we can gain chizuk to not be nervous to overdo it with our children, to encourage them. You know, we can always encourage a child, but some encouragements are definitely stronger than others. You can encourage a child by saying, oh, it'll be good for you. And you can encourage a child by saying, look, we're your parents, and we know this will be good for you. You may not understand it now, but it'll put you on a path to develop a fear of God in the years to come. And so therefore, we are going to do this together. Wishing everybody a good Shabbos, a Gmar Chasima Tova, good preparations for this upcoming Yom Kippur. And I hope you enjoyed all those different approaches to Hakel as much as I did.